What is food security? Is food security something that everyone should be worrying about? Or is food security an issue only government needs to worry? In 2020, and in light of this COVID situation, personally, I think food security is everyone's business. The food security, as defined by the United Nations Committee on World Food Security, it means that all people at all times have physical, social, and economic access to sufficient, safe, and nutrition foods that meets their food preference and dietary needs for an active and healthy life. I know it's a lot of process, but this podcast is all about the growing, the making, the keeping, the storing, distribution, everything about food, but not just about the taste. Hi, my name is Ip, and welcome to the Functional Food Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Functional Food Podcast. And I'm your host, Ip, as always. So today, no guests again, so sorry. Today, we are going to be diving a little bit into this handy data tool called data.gov.sg. So basically, this is the data that the government has, the various agencies within Singapore, where they make this data public. So you can see things like what is the total expenditure by the government in 2020, you know, how many cars are there by population type, and you know, how many Singaporean residents are there by gender last year, ethnic groups, birth rate, domestic exports, etc., etc. But all this, we are not that interested yet. Today, we're going to zoom in into the topic that we are most interested in, and that is food production. All right. So, among the data sets that we have for food in general, there's a few, okay? So, there is supermarkets, listing of licensed supermarkets. So that includes the address and the name of the business, right? So that is maybe we will explore later if you have time. The next thing is a licensed food establishments. Specifically, this is food factories. So I would assume when they say food factories, it literally means that a business that manufactures food. I will be, you know, flabbergasted if that doesn't mean it that way. But the good thing about this, the data.gov, is that sometimes they have the option you can toggle between a chart or a table. So right now, I am looking at the licensed food establishment-food factories. So this data set was last updated on the February 17, 2016. And it's licensed under the Singapore Open Data License. So that means we can, you know, through this podcast, I can link to you in the show notes, and I can speak to you about this data that's presented. All right. So let's look at the numbers, right? So back in 1993, so that is 17 years back into the future, right? I think. Yeah. Most likely 17 years, if I'm not wrong. Do correct me if I'm wrong, but back in 1993, all right, so this is where the data set starts. Back in 1993, there is 1,445 established or licensed food factories. And that's back in 1993. And then we see a plummet of business 2 years down the road. So 2 years later, in 1995, there's only 1,203 licensed food establishment. And then it kind of, over the decade, it eroded until the lowest point in 2005. 15 years, oh, I'm sorry. 93 is 27 years ago. Oh, damn it, knife. Jeez, okay, so now I feel old. Yeah, I forgot today is 2020 already. Yep, so it's a long time ago. Half a lifetime for me, I guess. No, more than that. most of my life. Anyway, back to the main topic. So back in 2005, there's only 1,119 licensed food establishment dash food factories. What does that mean? It means that in 2005, the food manufacturing industry has either shrunk to a point where it's so low that nobody wants to do it, but suddenly, right, 2005 to 2015, it has been a steady growth and explodes. It's almost a linear, a non-stop linear growth up to 2014, where we have 1,547 licensed food establishments, bracket, food factories. So there is 1,547 food factories in Singapore as of 2014, or actually as of February 17, 2016. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, it means that right now, I mean, we are not sure on the actual figure, but as of right now, we are 6 years into that future. I look at the items that are usually in, so I spoke about this before actually. I think that was in the episode where I spoke to Sophie Bionutrients, Eugene Wang. So Eugene, I told him that when I look at the supermarket, right, so if you look at it correctly, usually the when you first enter, you will see fresh food, you know, fruits, vegetables, etc. But they actually make up a very small number of the supermarket itself. So the large part of the supermarket is actually processed food of certain kind. So all these factories, they are making processed food. So that is why I feel these, all the new alternative protein, all the new alternative food, right? That's why I feel that they play a very important role in trying to establish food security in Singapore, because basically they are a food factory. You know, no matter how you want to talk about cruelty-free, you know, stress-free, whatever-free, wherever stance you are at, you know, they are a food factory. Like, the patties from Impossible and Beyond don't grow up from a tree, you know. They will probably sourced from multiple plants, you know, soybean, pea isolate, whatever ingredient it is, it's a multiple ingredients combining into one. So when you have this combination happening, what do you need? You need a factory. You don't need a farm, right? You need a factory. Same for the cell cultured meat. You know, they're not going to come up from an animal, so there's no farm. There's only a factory. So I think, if this data is actually, if they can update it, I don't know when, but if they ever updated this data set, I think it would be very interesting to take a look at, because with all the kind of, not really consolidation, but with all the push in innovation, I would think that this number would not stay 1,005 for very long. I may even predict at the rate they are growing approximately anywhere between they're growing about 50-60 licensed food establishment food factories every year on year, about 60 or so. So you know, now it's 6 years, so 360. So yeah, so I think by now there'll be probably about 2,000 food factories. And then of course this number could hover around that and stay there for a very long while, because now there is the whole concept of cloud factories. So like you know, the computer servers like Amazon AWS, Azure and Google, right? So the kitchen is taking the same concept where you as a cook, a chef, a baker, you know, you don't need to own the kitchen stuff. You just need to find businesses that will sublet this, rent this kitchen time to you. So you just go in and cook, and that's it. So I think with this sort of idea in mind, I think 2000, if the numbers is correct, may probably just hover. But I know a lot of these kind of food startups, food tech startups, right? They don't actually need to. Like I read around, some of them just want to license the tech out, so they don't want to be the one making it. They want to research, develop, but they don't want to be the operators. So I think I will be having the opportunity to interview this year's Livability Challenge winner, the 33 Labs. So they have a list, you know, they are licensing. And from what I can see on the website, that they're licensing their milk production technology from sales. They will license to if you are a milk producer, they will license to you and you make the milk. You probably pay them royalties and stuff, but they're not going to be making the milk themselves. Okay, then we have someone like Sophie Bionutrients. So they will be making, they are using algae to make the raw material. But they're not necessarily the one making this raw material into the finished product. So you have various tiers of food manufacturing happening within Singapore, and they're all within factories. You know, so that's why I think a place like Singapore, food factory as a concept, right? It's going to be multi-layered, and it's going to be a very, very important component for the food security aspect. So that means, right, what I'm trying to say essentially is I think we will have to alter the fundamental way of us eating. The usual, you know, beef, pork, mutton, chicken, duck. All this will still be around, but fundamentally what what our grandkids will be eating, say 50 years from now, so it's 2070, right? In 2070, the type of food that is available would be so radically different from what is available today. So today in 2020, food are still kind of traditional, meaning to say meat is from animals and vegetables are from plants, right? But now we are seeing quote-unquote meat is coming from plants and, you know, being repackaged, repurposed into from vegetables into meat. So who is to say that in the future you can't have, like what Sophie Bionutrients is doing, you repackage the output of a algae and you turn it into a vegetable. You know, like Eugene mentioned that there are so many unknown algae that possibly we could be eating that in the future, you know. So like, I think Spirulina is a very good example. If you ever heard of it, it's basically an algae that grows in water and you collect it. It's green and stuff, and then you kind of, like when I had it, you can have it in the powder form or you can have it in the pill form. And it's like a supplement, protein and stuff. So I won't be surprised as the environment degrades further due to climate change and due to the increase of people that's, you know, physically being around and the reduction of space to grow. I think all these food factories, they will become more and more important as we innovate further on, you know, making food from things that we have never thought of. So yeah, prediction of 2020 is in the next 10 years time, in 2030, alright, so if this podcast is still around in 2030, we will look back into this episode and see how many predictions has gone true. Right, so there is this data set, so let me just, so I'll link this into the show notes, you can check it out later. The next one I want to talk about is the value of local food production. So what does this mean? It means that whatever food that they labeled in this chart, this table, this is all local farms or caught in local waters. So there is only four categories here. and there is the vegetables industry, the vegetables production. There is the seafood production, aka seafood as in farms making rearing fish and shellfish. And then we have chicken eggs. It says hen shell eggs. I don't really know what they mean by hen shell eggs. I'm assuming they only mean chicken eggs. I don't know why they call it hen shell eggs. Anyway, you can take a look at the data set and you can tell me whether or not does this make sense. And then the last one is local landings, which means seafood caught from local waters. Okay, so actually I'm a bit astonished that Singapore waters have $12 million worth of annual food production. Can you believe it? $12 million. That means if a fish is sold at a dollar each, there is 12 million fish to be caught in Singapore waters. Oh my gosh. Do you know how small Singapore is? If you're staying in Singapore, you know how small we are. Specifically, Singapore from east to west is only about 50 km across. And we are surrounded by countries, so our nautical miles isn't that much as well. So I'm very surprised that we can produce $12 million worth of fish annually. And it seems to be a decreasing amount. So this data that I'm looking right now, 12 million, is 2019's data set. This data set is created only last year, April 8, 2019. And it has been updated on the 19th of June this year. So I'm guessing this probably have like maybe a financial year kind of reporting, or they only report, you know, they update this year but for last year stuff, whatever it means. All right, so actually back in 2012, so this data set is started from 2012, there is $14 million worth of fish being caught in local waters versus today's 12 million. So yeah, and so what's interesting is maybe we zoom in to when you look at this data set, right? Back in 2017, there's only $10 million worth of fish caught in Singapore. So I don't remember any catastrophic. Oh, maybe it was the haze. Maybe that's why. I think that's interesting. Alright, so the next thing that is kind of interesting is the local farm production of vegetables and fish. So in 2019, they are almost on parity. $42 million worth of vegetables and $45 million worth of seafood, fish and shellfish. That's interesting. So personally speaking, I do drive my car from where I stay about, and I drive to Choa Chu Kang, which is maybe 20 to 30 minutes worth of drive. I drive there almost every weekend to buy vegetables directly from the farm. Now, I'm not going to review the name of the farm yet. If they want to sponsor me, I will review it. But also, I don't want to review it because I don't want everyone to be going there to buy it. So, what I like about the farm that I bought from is that the type of vegetables that they have are the kind that I like. So, you know, and the price isn't really that expensive. So, all right. So typically vegetables are sold in the size range of 250 grams thereabouts. So if you look at it, maybe if you're familiar with the Shanghai green, okay, this vegetable, 250 grams, it means anywhere between, depending on size of individuals, but it could mean 4 pieces to 8 pieces, depending on size of the individuals, but it equates to about 250 grams. So somewhere in Sheng Siong, right, you could probably get it for 99 cents, for a dollar, sometimes 80 cents. But here in the farm that I bought from, it costs double the price, $2. But I'm willing to pay that double price simply because the difference between the ones that I buy from supermarket and the one that I drive up to the farm on the weekend is that the supermarket stuff are generally not so fresh. What I mean by that is I can, for example, I can buy today, right, and I don't feel like eating it today, so I decided to put it in the fridge. Maybe 3 days down the road, the vegetable has wilted, like to a point where you probably don't want to eat it. Whereas this farm, I always buy enough for the week, so by Thursday or Friday, the stuff starts to wilt already. However, I give them an hour, I soak in water in an hour. Over an hour later, right, they'll recover mostly to the point where it looks like it still looks fresh. And then when I cook it, it still retains the crunch and the moisture. So that is why I actually went down and buy. But having said that, like, it doesn't increase my budget all that much. So in fact, because of this increased freshness, I actually eat more vegetables these days, and it's actually more satisfying to eat fresh vegetable. Supermarket vegetable, in my opinion, they are not as fresh as you think. So now I avoid buying fish. I avoid buying vegetables entirely from supermarket. The only thing that I buy there are fruits. So apples. I do buy apples from supermarket. In fact, today I just bought a South African candy apple, 99 cents for 500 gram, which I think was cheap. It's really, really cheap, and it's tasty, you know, candy apples. So they're really not really candy apples. They're probably, they're just very, very small apples. So they probably don't make the cut for, you know, the normal apple price, which apples in Singapore is actually very expensive. 3 apples cost anywhere between $2 to $5, depending on the type of apples and the time of the year. So yeah, extremely expensive. Like, I was staying in Tasmania, so that is known as the Apple Island. If you have ever heard of it before, it's called the Apple Island. The apples in Tasmania is like, I buy them by weight, and they cost, you know, during like farmers market, they can cost as low as $1 per kilo, this sort of stuff, you know. And the apples there is, whew, I love apples there, man. Like, I really miss having, you know, to stay in a country that has legitimate agriculture output. Not like ours. So like, I look at it, right, like Singapore's food production, 40 million, 80, and then 12, 90. So it's only a sub $200 million output annually. So not too great. So yeah, Singapore actually has, Singapore local eggs production is $78 million worth, which is the highest among all the production. So that's actually very interesting, because I think Singaporeans eat a lot of eggs. Like if you go and, you know, the hawker centers, most likely you'll find eggs in almost every single store. In one form or another, you'll find eggs. Like the noodle shops, if they sell, you know, laksa, there'll be eggs. If they sell the Malay foods such as mee rebus, there's eggs. If you go and eat, you know, Indian food, you eat mee goreng. Indian Muslim food, actually. If you eat Indian Muslim food, there's also an egg all on it most of the time, and there's egg in the noodles. Chinese egg fried rice. So eggs is, like, you know, everywhere. Myself, I consume 2 to 3 eggs in the morning, almost on a daily basis. But I must say that the eggs in Singapore are, the only thing I can describe is probably there's a lot more to improve, and probably if they can manage the whole, you know, bring down the stress component of chicken eggs, of chicken. I think Singapore eggs will be much more better, but you know, that's for another day to talk about. So this data set of local food production, very interesting. So the whole 30 by 30 is going to raise up to 30%. So that means right now we are in a negligible $200 million of food is actually not enough for Singaporeans. You know, so actually we eat a lot of food for the number of people that we have. So 6 million people, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot of people, but apparently we need much more. Because, okay, so this 200 million, right, it apparently it amounts up to about 10% of local production. So 30 by 30 essentially means that they want to reduce imports and they want to raise local production. So we need to be, I think, 30% self-sufficient by 2030. That's why it's a 30 by 30 goal. So essentially, it means we have to triple the effort of the output. So looking at this data, right, we are sub 200 million. If we were to triple it, we are looking at maybe a $700 million industry of combined fish that is caught in the local waters, the eggs, farms that farm fish and, you know, shellfish and vegetables. And then this 30 by 30 will also encourage all these alternative proteins, alternative whatever. Yeah, so I think it'll be interesting to see this in maybe 2-3 years down the road. Actually no, in maybe 5 years down the road, maybe 5 or 10 years down the road, there could be a new category, and I don't know what they'll call it, but they might call it alternative proteins, or they, I don't know, I have no idea. But it'll be interesting to see next year, actually, 3 years later, to see if the 30 by 30 will actually have any significant impact on the actual output of, you know, the nation. And the last data set that we want to look at is the farming area by hectare. And specifically, this chart only shows 2014 FY. Okay, and the land area is in hectare. So let's look at the biggest usage of farming space in Singapore, and that is under the orchid and ornamental plants. So all the house plant people, you know, Singapore has got the priorities correct. 240 hectares. And then a sharp drop, number two, aquarium fish for breeding and export, 142 hectares. And then the 40 million industry, which is the vegetables, 113 hectare produces 40 million output annually. And then the sea-based farm, so the fish, the crust, and the sea, and the shellfish, is occupying 103 hectares. So actually this is a bit meaningless because they're on the ocean, you know. So I think this number can easily increase. Then we have the space that this $80 million industry of eggs is only on 48 hectare worth. So that means to say that if you were to invest in farming, it's actually better to invest in eggs rather than in vegetables, because you need double the space and you're not even producing the same amount of value. In fact, egg production has half the space, but they produce double the value. So, you know, you might want to go that route. Aquatic plants occupies 11 hectares. I don't know who needs, I mean, probably aquatic plants for the aquariums. Yeah, I don't think anybody eats aquatic plants. The only aquatic plants that we can, or in fact, even seaweed isn't even plants. They are macroalgae, so not plants per se. I don't know what this aquatic plants for. The next one, very closely, frogs and crocodile. I never knew they occupy such a big space, 11 hectare for frogs and crocodiles. I've seen frogs, frog meat in supermarket. I think I've also seen crocodile meat in supermarket in the frozen section somewhere. I'll need to explore it. I will, you know, explore it and get back to you guys if you're interested to know. Dog breeding, pet boarding, dog training, all lumped together, 9.5 hectare. And then we have another 9.5, and we have another similar space, which is the milk industry. Dairy cattle and goats, so they occupy 9 hectare. I think there's probably only one or two in Singapore. The hay dairies that make goat's milk, that is, they have been around since as long as I can remember. And the other one that I've actually supported is Vishnu. So Vishnu is, they make cow's milk. So probably, you know, cows. So I think it'd be nice that if I maybe can pay a trip down to this, you know, to Hay Dairy and Vishnu, and just to have a chat with the owners, see what they feel about food security. 8 hectares worth of land is allocated to exotic birds. So, exotic birds, eh? Not for eating though, pets. So you can see Singaporeans love the pets and the ornamental plants. And then quails, we have 4 hectare. So quail is interesting because quail does not eat as much as chicken, does not eat as much space as chicken, and by their natural kind of by nature lah. Like quail, you can, you know, they are more suited bird for smaller space. But quail is not really a big industry in Singapore. As you can see, there's only 4 hectare worth. And then they share the same amount of space as fonder crops. F-O-D-D-E-R crops. So I guess the animals that make food for us eats these guys. So they are probably making a hell of money. 4.7 hectare. Yeah, so this is the entire farming area in Singapore. So I don't think they'll be expanding the vegetable farming area much. So we're probably looking at a sub 120 hectare sort of, and they need to triple the efforts. So vertical green will definitely, you know, increase the production, but to triple things, in the next 10 years, man, with the same amount of space, this is going to be a tough journey, man. Very, very tough journey. Like, you know, the seafood. Yeah, even the seafood as well. Like, I don't think I've actually purchased Singapore farm fish. Yeah, because my wife actually, she gets her father-in-law to purchase, and, you know, God knows where I don't think they buy from Singapore farm fish. Actually, yeah, I think it would be a good topic. It would be a good segment for me to explore in the podcast all this made in Singapore foods, and maybe just do a short episode about how they taste and how much it costs. So I think it'd be a great one to have. Eggs, yeah. So yeah, these are the data that you can obtain from data.gov.sg. There's a lot of topics you can choose from, and you can play around with it. And all these data sets that we talk about will be in your show notes. I hope you have kind of learned a thing or two about what data is available in Singapore. And, you know, if you are going to open a farm, you know, maybe you can start to think about the things that you can do. Oh, before I kind of end it off, there's another data set that I'll be looking at, and that is the slaughtered livestock. So let's take a look at the quails. Actually, I'm quite interested in it. So they are grown on 4 hectare of land. And the average number of quails that they slaughter on a yearly basis is 80,000 quails. Damn. That is a lot of birds. And I'm assuming these 80,000 are all Singapore locally grown. So, wow. And then we have chickens, that's slaughtered chickens. So, how many is that? Let's take a look. 51 million chicken slaughtered. 51 million. So, that means for some reason, I don't know whether does this account for all, does this 51 million equals to like it's slaughtered, but is it sold in Singapore? I don't know. They don't break it down this way. But we've only got 5 million people and we eat 51 million chicken. Damn, that is a crazy amount. Livestock, poultry, so I guess poultry means ducks, quails. Oh, it's only 56 million. So yeah, the vast majority, 99%, are chickens. And then the last. So this data set has multiple files, and the last one I'm looking at is pigs. So, how many pigs are being slaughtered on an annual basis? 350,000 pigs, as of last year. They average around 320,000 pigs. That is a lot of pigs. Singaporeans are consuming. I am consuming so much pork. Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't really eat pork every day though. Do I? That would be another interesting topic to explore. I should really document what I actually eat throughout the day and see how much impact do I generate as an average person living an average life in Singapore. And then of course there will be that one day where I live my life as a higher than average person. So it's going to be expensive food for the day. There'll be a great trip for me and my wife. And then of course I will also explore one day as below the average. Probably do the $2 challenge, if you heard of it. They say that, you know, a big chunk of the world's population is living off $2 a day. So that can be also a topic, because I think that actually this topic actually goes very well with food security. So with, you know, the various budget points, $2, you know, $20, $100, $500 a day, like what can you eat? I don't think I'll be able to afford $500 a day, but I do know people who does that. So I will probably interview them and see what they say. Yeah, so I think that concludes today's episode of exploring government data sets, and especially topics that interest us, this food security podcast. So that's about it, and I thank you for listening. As always, if you would like to leave a message or you would like to take part in this podcast, you can always leave a message. You can always go to functionalfoodpodcast.com, and then they will bring you to the page where you can leave a message, or you can, yeah, I mean, all my links is there. So, you know, just, or leave a review. That'd be great. I would appreciate if you can leave a review in the Apple iTunes, the podcast directory, or Spotify. I don't know, sorry, Spotify, you can't really review. I think only Apple you can do that. So yeah, I will appreciate a review, thumbs up, 5 stars, you know the drill, because that will help me understand more on what kind of content that you would like to listen to. Okay, and with that said, I will see you guys in the next episode. So guys, see you then. Bye bye.